Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 28th of January. This is our show, part of the Faith Radio Network, in which we cover so many of the topics and headlines of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective, where we fix our eyes on Jesus together, keep this crazy journey of life moving forward, not alone, but together. So thanks for listening. Again this morning, I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are in studio with Paul Perreault and Rachel Sutton here producing the show. And apparently, Paul Perreault, we are going to be broadcasting live from the Arctic Circle, maybe even the North Pole, all week here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. You've seen a lot of weather over the years, and clearly the snow is not terrible today.
Do yet. I look that old?
Well, you know, no comment on that part of it, but clearly over the last 150, 200 years, you have seen a lot of different weather patterns in this. And
well, this is going to be some of the coldest weather in probably 20, 23 years. I think you have to go back to the winter of like 96, which was brutal. I was living in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and it was brutal there. I had to pull the battery out of my car, bring it into the house or into the work where I was working, just to make sure it would start when I had to go home. So that was brutal. This is getting close to that for this next several days here.
Yeah.
Wind chills, what I've been reading is between Tuesday and Thursday, we could see wind chills for our Fargo listeners. Wind chills around 60 below zero at night. 50 below zero here in the Twin Cities. I mean, it's just going to be... It is going to be cold. Welcome to Nanook Week.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I know that with our five kids at home, Hallie and I, we talk often about the fact that we had, you know, the winters of our youth. And I don't know if we remember our youth correctly related to all of that, but this does feel like these moments where there's just a mountain of snow and it gets icy cold. And I'm sorry, I got to admit, I'm kind of reveling in the fact you're saying, see, you're going to understand what your parents went through growing up when we were walking, you know, uphill both ways through all of those things. I never thought I would say that in my life, but here I am saying these things. It is going to be quite a week ahead. There's no question about it.
It is going to be quite a week. But the carrot being dangled in front of us by Saturday, much of the upper Midwest will be in the upper 20s, maybe even some low 30s. So it's and I'm talking above.
Yeah.
So we'll have a rebound toward the weekend.
Well, it won't stop us from doing our show here this morning. Glad to be in studio. And Paul, it's a big morning. We come in on Mondays like this, and there's so many things to talk about. So Brandon Showalter up first here in just a minute from the Christian Post. He does such a good job covering these difficult gender kinds of topics. We're going to talk
about
conversion therapy and how Denver banned that practice. We'll get into some difficult conversations about children being treated as drag queens. And Adam Carrington is so good. You know, and we'll talk with him the second half of this hour about some of the Democratic candidates coming out to run for 2020. As well as the border wall conversation.
Oh, yes. After the weekend of the shutdown being ended temporarily, this is an important discussion.
Yeah, it would be a big morning. Thanks for listening this morning here as we get started on Faith Radio Mornings. Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post is already on the line. We're going to talk with him next about some difficult headlines that are facing our youth and all of this gender-bending kind of conversation. You know, Brandon, this is my last week on the show until I shifted some new roles here at Faith Radio Network, and I can still remember vividly the day that you revealed that you could sing in multiple different languages, I think, even, you know, different national anthems. We love the opera part of it, and I still haven't heard you sing, so we're going to have to get you on tape somewhere along the line here.
Well, okay, but it's probably not going to be again at 7 a.m. in the morning here on the East Coast because I am like a bullfrog at that time of day.
I love it. Well,
I'll have to sing for you at some point.
I will FaceTime you later tonight, and I expect a full rendition of something from Pavarotti. I love it.
Okay.
Well, thanks for joining us. I know there's lots to get to, and the headlines aren't always easy. I know some of the work you do for the Christian Post is difficult kinds of things. I would imagine, even though as a journalist, you have to stay removed at some level from the material that you have to engage with. But boy, some of these headlines coming out of the sexualization of our children and celebrating some of the gender bending and even exploiting them in some of these drag queens kind of festivals. Tell us what's going on here. Some of this was really hard to read.
Yes, we are really seeing the rotten fruit of the sexual revolution start to affect our kids in a whole new way, and it's really disheartening, to say the least. You mentioned the child drag queens. It's who would have ever thought? I mean, I think the mass media has been grooming parents and the general public, and it's just unconscionable. There's a major program, I believe it was Good Morning America, that has featured a child drag queen who is dancing in a very suggestive manner, and it's just everybody's there celebrating it. And this one particular child is, I think 9 or 10 years old, and he was just rocketed around the internet, but was dancing at a gay nightclub in New York where people were throwing dollar bills at him. And, I mean, it just sounds so unbelievable, but this is happening today. And, you know, it's what often happens here, and it's just a manipulation technique called gaslighting, where people sow seeds of doubt into your mind to make you question your own perception of reality, and people will flip the script and say, well, if you think that's sexualized, you're the real pervert, not me. And that's what a lot of his parents are doing when, you know, he was caught on film, you know, dancing at this nightclub. It's really bad. And I hope people say something and do something about this, because this is not okay. And even though, you know, many media outlets just seem to portray it as this is just a kid being his creative self or doing what he likes, this is pretty dark and diabolical, if you ask me. As we've discussed several times on the show before, what's being done to children in gender clinics to change their sex, which is physically impossible, this is just yet another thing that's being done that is pretty awful. So I say once again, speak out, do something. Don't just let it, you know, don't just let it be another thing that overwhelms you. Do something about it.
I'm mindful, Brandon. I know that it was probably about 7 years ago in my class that my students asked me to research in my sexuality class how to understand some of the different dynamics and dimensions of the same gender relationship as it was starting to work its way through our country from a marriage amendment standpoint. And I remember looking at the word homosexuality in the New Testament at that time in the original language of the Greek. And one of the dimensions of homosexuality that Paul was so against in the Roman Empire at that time was the adult exploitation of children, where they were using young children for sexual purposes and sexual gain. And I remember back then, Brandon, thinking, how do they possibly think about the world in the Roman Empire that was just an acceptable way of life? But here we are now, some 7 years later, and as enlightened as we think we might have become as a society in the last 2,000 years compared to back then, really almost nothing different under heaven or earth.
Nothing different. I think people are starting to see some of the warnings that, you know, those of us who do believe in the historic ancient teachings with respect to marriage and sexual ethics in the Bible, many warned that what was once thought unconscionable could become status quo, particularly as it relates to the sexualization of children. And unfortunately, some of those predictions are proving prescient. And yeah, you talk about getting me hot under the collar. It's just talk about sexualizing children. I don't think there's anything more evil, frankly.
As part of that, too, I know that the city of Denver came out and they banned any kind of sense of conversion therapy, meaning that somebody who might be same gender attracted or experiencing some gender dysphoria, there wouldn't be a movement forward to help work through some of those issues. There's an assumption that there's an identity that goes with it. And so it's actually considered bullying or brutal to investigate sort of a sense of dysphoria or same gender attraction. We really just need to embrace. And this is part of what you just described, Brandon, about how we go from that which was shocking to maybe normalizing it pretty quickly.
Yes, and here's the thing about the ban in Denver and any other ban like it. What are they banning? I mean, the kinds of, you know, abusive things like electroshock therapy or any of those kind of really, you know, controversial treatments have been banned for decades. This seems to be about the state, the government trying to get its nose into the therapy room and police the kinds of conversations that can be had. And what I, you know, interviewed Ann Polk in the article, she said, it's like, look, if a client comes in to a therapist's office and wants to talk about, say, distress over unwanted gender dysphoria or same-sex oriented attractions, a client should be able to freely talk about whatever he or she wants to talk about. It's not going to, I mean, the therapist, and moreover, and I've spoken to other psychologists about this particular issue, and they say, you know, really, what are they going to even try to ban? Because there are all sorts of ethical guidelines that licensed therapists have and abide by. And so, and today, I don't know of any, I've read up on this, I don't know of any government body that has ever formally taken action against a therapist for doing this quote-unquote conversion therapy. I mean, it just seems like, to me, it seems like a more nefarious purpose behind these kinds of things. It's about the suppression of the gospel. And church counselors are still going to be, this seems to affect licensed therapists. Church counselors are going to be able to pray with people who are, you know, they feel certain attractions or the sexual feelings that they don't want. I mean, people, I just think this entire push to ban these things, we have to look at, okay, what's really going on here? What's the motive behind what's being outlawed? I would submit that it's something bigger and something more nefarious at work here.
And Brandon, I know when you look at the perspective of history that our world and cultures go through cycles of sort of spiraling downward on different topics and different ways of life, and then there's renewal that happens. Is there some hope maybe into the future? You mentioned the rotten fruit piece of it, and we end up just spiraling so far down into conversations, but there does tend to be a God who ever renews, and sometimes it's not always easy, but do we have some hope in this moving forward that there could be some backlash against the backlash that we've seen over the last 40 years?
I believe that too, and I'm so glad you asked that, because I think people are, I mean, I've conversed with people who are not believers and, you know, friends who think very differently than me, who are seeing the rotten fruit and how harmful the sexual revolution has been, at least some aspect of it. I've met secular people who have said that they believe that no-fault divorce has been a disastrous social experiment. I've interacted with some feminists and even some lesbians who are talking about their horror about the transgender movement, where they're pumping youngsters full of hormones to try and change their sex. They're just horrified by it. I have to think that as weaponized as the sexual revolution has become in our society, it's built on so many lies, and therefore it can't last. It is destined to collapse. Now, we still, as believers in Jesus Christ, I think as a matter of justice and righteousness, are just called to stand up and resist it in whatever way we can. But no, I don't think it will last, because it can't last. It's not sustainable. And because of that, I do think there will be some who will come to really reject its claims, having once supported it. So let's pray for a backlash, and let's hope that people do come to their senses, because I think more and more the harms are becoming more apparent. And so, Lord, hasten that day when many more people see it.
You know, we certainly can pray, Brandon. We certainly can model a different way of life as well into the future. It's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, who joins us regularly on Monday mornings to talk through some of the different difficult social topics of our day. And Brandon, when we come back from break in a minute, love to change the topic over to Pastor James McDonald and Ministry Walk in the Word. Some pretty interesting headlines coming out of that, just some controversy and navigating. Need to get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Give up hope. You're gonna do great things. I already know.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 28th of January. We're talking with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post about some of the topics of the day. And Brandon, it's a story I haven't followed quite closely enough, perhaps, but certainly it seems to fall into the vein of some of the difficult headlines we've seen in the Protestant church recently around people who have had positions of power, maybe not used that power terribly well. And James McDonald seems to be falling into that category a bit right now. Tell us about this story that's emerging from the situation.
Well, I've written a few articles about this, and the picture still is not totally clear to me, and I'm sure there's a lot more details that I, you know, just in my own coverage of it, I don't know. But there was a big piece in World Magazine by Julie Royce, an investigative piece into Harvest Bible Chapel in the Chicago area, where it was alleged that the megachurch, it's got many campuses across Chicagoland, had done some suspicious things with funds that shifted around, you know, ministry entities to move money around in a way that was kind of unethical. And it was also alleged that Pastor James McDonald had treated people abusively, among other things. And so there's a lot that has shaken out since the publication of that piece. Julie Royce was actually sued by McDonald and the church, along with some other bloggers and their wives. These bloggers had written critically of McDonald for several years, and that lawsuit was ultimately dropped earlier this month. And so we're just now seeing, we continue to see the fallout from all of that, and it's going to be something to continue to watch, and it is unfortunate to see this kind of thing happening. If any of it is indeed true, it looks like much of it is, but you know, I'm still trying to watch this with as an objective eye as possible. It's sad to see. I don't like having to report on stuff that's going on in churches that is unfortunate, but you know, we have to report the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so it's just kind of one of those things.
We have a couple of minutes left here, Brandon, and I'm mindful that it seems like throughout history, the church and the culture end up kind of being of such a same mind that they can blend together so often, and churches can become almost sort of these business places and free enterprise and vocation and growth and all of that. And so it seems like to me some of the things that you see and wrestle with CEOs of secular businesses where there may be people of power and not acting appropriately, that has and often does bleed into the church, unfortunately.
Right. I totally believe in the principle of tithing, and I think there's nothing wrong with churches having pastors who are entrepreneurial and, you know, finding ways to fund ministry that are integrous. But when the church does indeed become too much like a business, I just don't think the kingdom of God can advance in a healthy way, because the focus is taken off of Christ and it's placed on making money. Nothing wrong with making money, but there's just, there's got to be a way to do this such that our priorities are in order. And it is unfortunate that some churches seem to care more about, you know, making a buck than they are about furthering the gospel or becoming a big celebrity pastor. I mean, there's a debate to be had certainly about the best way to plant churches and expand when, you know, ministries seem to be thriving and growing. We've just got to have our priorities straight and keep our eyes on Jesus and stay in tune with what he would have us do when it comes to ministry of the gospel and planting ministries in places where people have not yet heard it.
Well, Brandon, thanks so much for the work that you do at the Christian Post. You do have to report on difficult things from time to time, but I appreciate the way that you objectively approach them and try to stay balanced and all that. It's been a great delight to work with you these past several months here on Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm sure we'll talk in the future.
Thank you, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Take a break here for Lighten Up and some bottom of the hour news. And when we come back, Adam Carrington and I, he's a professor of politics at Hillsdale College. We're going to talk a little bit about the resolution of the government shutdown, as well as some of the interesting entrants into the Democratic side of things for the 2020 election. Ken Davis cracking us up this morning here, Faith Radio team. Hopefully a little bit of delight and laughter into your life as well. Appreciate just the ministry that he does that brings such joy of the kingdom into our world. And tough topics with Brandon Showalter on the front end of our show this morning. So appreciate some of the laughter on top of that. And message of hope again this morning from N.T. Wright, theologian out of St. Andrews in Scotland. He often writes about hope and the resurrection and the empty tomb. And he says that the message of Easter is that God's new world has been unveiled in Jesus Christ and that you are now invited to belong to it. And so in the midst of all the difficult headlines and the topics of the day, there is a kingdom that knows no end, and we can live anchored in that reality of the present and of the future. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, we are joined by Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com, one of our favorites here, who does such a great job covering so many of the popular culture topics of the day. And he was talking about offering both grace and truth related to Lady Gaga's recent statements on Christianity.
Over and over in the New Testament, we see that Jesus came in grace and truth. You know, he told the woman caught in adultery, "Neither do I condemn you." But then what did he say? "Now go and leave your life of sin." And I think sometimes people like Lady Gaga, they want to latch on to the first part, "Neither do I condemn you," the idea that there is grace, there is forgiveness, there is welcome, there is no prejudice. That is true as far as it goes, but there's a deep hesitancy, if not outright rejection, of the second half, of the truth, which is there is right and wrong, there is a way that God has designed things to be, and when we choose not to live in accordance with that, we do harm to ourselves and other people. And so is there grace and is there forgiveness for that stuff? Yeah, there is. There's unlimited grace for all of the ways that we fall short, but that doesn't mean we shortchange truth.
Adam, as a person who studied the Bible, ministry, and comments on popular culture items, is just such a great guest to have on the program, so appreciate his wisdom and insight. And if you want to catch all of what he had to say last Friday and previewing some movies and making some comments about popular culture, you can head to myfaithradio.com, search for PluggedIn.com, last Friday's show. Anything along those lines will take you to some of the topics he covered last week. Well, up next, I'll be joined by another Adam, one of our favorites here on Faith Radio Mornings as well. It's Adam Carrington of Hillsdale College, and Adam and I talk politics regularly. Got to ask Adam about his take on what happened with the at least short-term resolution of the government shutdown, as well as some of the Democratic candidates coming into the race here for the 2020 election.
There's no major issue of our world about which God's Word does not provide the most basic and transcendent truth. This is Jim Garlow. Most Christians readily understand the application of biblical truths to personal life, personal emotions, personal ambitions, fears, desires, or to family life. But when it comes to the political, we recoil, most often with the much abused phrase, separation of church and state, as if God has no interest in government. Yet it was God who first thought of government and even described it as being on the shoulder of his incarnated Son. When one mentions the government, particularly pastors, we begin running. This creates great delight to the evil one. But a sovereign king, fully in charge king, doesn't yield any ground to the evil one. And he never intended for us to do that either. This is Jim Garlow, and there's always more of these kind of stories at jimgarlow.com.
It is just about 21 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm your host here for Faith Radio Mornings, Peter Kapster, and delighted to be joined, as always, by our friend Dr. Adam Carrington, who does such a great job covering the politics of the day. And Adam, I've talked to people sort of off air, you know, and they love your segments, they love your presence, and somebody was commenting this last week that they couldn't believe that you can't even enter the election cycle because you're not old enough to run for office at this point.
Well, I'm glad that I actually don't sound as immature as I am.
I love it. Well, you certainly do not bring an immature perspective to some of these topics. I've learned so much over the past 7 months with you here on Faith Radio Mornings, and look forward to our conversations. And wanted to get your take, obviously, on what happened over the past few days, where we see at least a temporary resolution to the government shutdown. And I have to admit, Adam, it seemed like things were so entrenched on either side of it. I was a little surprised at what happened here. But I also, I don't know about you, I don't remain terribly hopeful that there's going to be any resolution on the border security in the 21 days that is part of this temporary stay.
Right. I think things started to move quickly when LaGuardia Airport shut down, because I think that was something that both sides, and particularly the president, saw would be really dangerous to him politically, and I think also dangerous to a lot of people if they didn't think it was safe enough to actually run planes. That could be a disaster that nobody wanted. And I think you're right that what happened was basically one side blinked, the president did, and that was a pretty quick one, because there's only 3 weeks to go to fund the government, and I think that nothing substantial was actually resolved. So we really have kicked the can down the road without either side really giving in on the substance of the question. So we could be in for a repeat in 3 weeks, or there could be some other way of resolving it, but I don't think it'll be an amicable one.
Yeah, and neither you nor me have a crystal ball, of course, but in trying to read the tea leaves a little bit, it would be a little hard to believe that we'd go back into shutdown mode. Is there a possibility that the president is even now laying the groundwork for more of sort of an emergency statement, that he would look for funding based on a national emergency move and get the wall built in a different kind of way?
From a political standpoint, even though that's been polled as pretty unpopular, I think that's his best way to get out of this, because almost immediately it would be stayed by the courts, and then it'd be very interesting to see what it would do if it got all the way up to the Supreme Court. But you're right. At this point, the Democrats have no incentive to budge. They got the president to stand down on giving the State of the Union. They got him to stand down on funding the government at least for 3 weeks without a border wall. And regardless of what you think of who was more right, and I think the president certainly was making some decent arguments on his side, really Pelosi was the one that has come out much stronger and much more in a position to dictate. But the president, I think, is in a position where that would be very dangerous for him to give any more ground. So I could very well see an emergency being declared, which we've talked about the difficulties of it constitutionally, but I think politically, in some ways, it makes the most sense for him.
Have we seen times in the past, Adam, where a president has declared a national emergency and there is controversy associated with it, or is it usually pretty generally accepted that there's a legitimate cause of the emergency? Do we have any precedent that the courts might look into related to this?
Not a lot, given the current situation, and there would be some controversy if you want to think of the courts. In the early 1950s, there was a threat of a strike at steel factories across the United States. There was union and labor strife between the two, and at that point the Korean War was going on, and President Truman actually had the Commerce Secretary at the time step in and nationalize the steel mills, saying it was a national emergency because of the war effort. So there is that precedent, although in that time the court actually didn't side with the president. They sided against him. And in this instance, we don't have a war, at least on the scale of Korea, to look at for that. So there would be some semi-parallels, but it would also be fairly unique, and therefore we don't know what the courts would do to declare immigration in a relative time of peace a national emergency. It would be very interesting, especially to see how would the two appointees that President Trump has put on the bench, what would they say? Justice Kavanaugh is someone who seems very open and broad in his view of executive power. Justice Gorsuch seems the opposite. He seems someone who's much more reticent on executive power. So that would be also something fascinating to watch as far as it goes. I mean, no one should want a national emergency for the interestingness of it, but it would be if that's the route that the president goes.
Yeah, and politically, he has promised to build that wall. Of course, we've seen that chant over and over and over again in different campaign stops. And, of course, the Democrats don't want to be seen as weak on border security, so they are positing ideas such as drones and electronic surveillance and other ideas about this. The last thing the Democrats want is to see President Trump get a political win with this wall. So it's hard to know how this is going to end on either side of it.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point to make, because sometimes the argument is that the whole of the Democratic Party is open borders and the whole of the Republican Party is for very strict immigration. It's a little more fluid if you look at the parties as a whole. And I think the Democrats recognize that they had a better hand when they argued that they wanted some kind of border security. If this had been the Democrats pushing to abolish ICE, as some of them had argued a year ago, I think the president would have beat them soundly in public opinion, because people want border security. And I think in some ways the Democrats have understood that President Trump's argument resonates with a lot of Americans, and if they're going to have a shot to gain the White House again and to expand their power beyond what they have in the House, they have to recognize that. So in some ways, I mean, that's a very thin silver lining for the president, that the Democrats are feeling they need to argue that. But it does show that he's had some effect on the debate, even though I think this round he didn't come out the winner between the two.
Yeah, certainly it seems like Nancy Pelosi has been roundly applauded for standing her ground, and maybe one of the few politicians that has done so in the past couple of years with President Trump.
Yes, and I think that it's quite fascinating. Both are very, very tough individuals as far as their ability to negotiate, their ability to take a hard line. And I think that Pelosi came in under a lot of fire from the political left. There were a number of people who ran for the House of Representatives saying they wouldn't support her for Speaker. She had to work very hard to get that gavel back. And I think that, again, regardless of what you think of her politics, she seems to have played this pretty well so far. There's always a danger that she could overplay her hand and get in trouble down the road. But this is one of the first times in a while that someone has gone toe-to-toe with the president and come out on top. And so we'll see if that has long-lasting effects or not.
Well, certainly the next 3 weeks are going to be really interesting to watch. As you said, nobody wants a national emergency declared from an interest standpoint, but at the same time, we'll be in some pretty unprecedented territory to wonder about. That's the voice of Adam Carrington, who joins us regularly on Mondays here on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about the political structure of the day and some of the headlines. When we come back, Adam, I got to get your take on the entrance of Kamala Harris into the 2020 side of things from the Democratic Party, as well as some pretty interesting rumblings coming out of former Starbucks CEO Adam Schultz, who might come from an independent standpoint into this election as well. So more to come with Adam Carrington next on Faith Radio Mornings. This seems like it's one of those things that you and Perot and Sutton cooked up in studio here to represent maybe our last time together in this current capacity, playing a little Hamilton like that. How did this go down?
Yes. You had told me very graciously and very nicely that you would be stepping back from this, and I sort of semi-tongue-in-cheek responded that we would be talking one last time and put that up there. I'm a big fan of the Hamilton musical. I think that's maybe come up before. So I am very glad that Paul publicly put you through that. That gave me a big, big smile as that popped on. I was hoping it would happen.
I love it. Well, you're certainly going to be a family favorite in our family, because my two oldest kids and my wife have been trying to convert me into sort of the Hamilton glory along with you. So thanks a lot for that social pressure here this morning, Adam.
Oh, sure, sure. I was telling my students about it when it wasn't even out yet, so it got me a lot of street credibility here. This is one of the few schools where that gets you lots of street credibility.
I love it. Well, it is sure fun to talk with you. I know I was looking forward to covering some of the topics as the Democratic candidates are emerging, and I saw that maybe one of the bigger names came out here this last week, and Kamala Harris, and she might have some staying power.
Yes, there's a number that have, I think, announced early because of either weaknesses or lack of name recognition and trying to, you know, have their day to try to get some traction. She is one of the big ones. She fits well within the current Democratic Party. She's from its base of California. She is someone who has established herself as a bit of a hero to the more progressive side that was frustrated with Hillary Clinton. So there are a number of ways that she could win the primary. I think she's got some weaknesses coming up against President Trump, if that was the case. But she is certainly going to be one of the heavyweights, partly, too, because she's done her homework. She worked very hard these last cycles to support Democratic candidates across the country, fundraise for them, stump for them, and that pays off when primary time comes. So she is someone who's at least showed not just the messaging but the structural work that she could be very formidable in the primary season.
Well, and I saw one of her promises that came out this weekend was the idea of Medicare for all. And, Adam, that used to be kind of a fringe idea, and it seems to become very mainstream among the Democratic side that's almost one of these vetting ideas. If you don't subscribe to Medicare for all, you're not going to be a candidate.
It's amazing how that's become the litmus test so quickly. And I do believe that while it is very much on the left-end spectrum of the Democratic economic policy, a far cry from Bill Clinton's sort of centrism of the 90s. I also think it is an attempt to – it is a reaction to the 2016 election. Democrats realize they ran so much on sort of identity politics, as it's called, related to race and gender and sexuality, that they lost a lot of blue-collar workers that have been with them for generations. And Medicare for all, we'll see. I think it's a little extreme to pick up too much traction, but it is an attempt to make the focus, more of a focus on the economic message in the hopes of winning back some of those voters in places like Michigan and Minnesota that President Trump almost won. So I think that's a very interesting attempt to do that, and fascinating, again, another reaction to the 2016 election.
Well, one of the other candidates that is at least floating the idea of running for office, but neither Republican or Democrat, is the former CEO of Starbucks. It's Howard Schultz, who is thinking about an independent run. And I got to tell you, Adam, if he would cut my prices on Starbucks Frappuccinos with a, you know, light whip and sugar-free caramel half price, he might just get my vote.
I just started drinking coffee in October, finally gave in, needing the caffeine. So I am much more open to the Starbucks platform at this point. in all seriousness, there might be some room for a third party candidate to make some headway, but I don't think he fits the profile of someone who would, because he is a billionaire without sort of a common man touch, so they could sort of not to make it a broader statement, but sort of Romney him the way that, you know, a lot of people did with the way he came across. The other thing is, a lot of his messaging so far has been deficit reduction and reining in Medicare and Social Security, and those just are not popular. They may be very important policy points, and they may actually be things that would make us a much more stable country if we address them. I actually think they would, but there is no constituent majority right now for addressing those problems. I think if you're going to have a successful third party run, it would be if you had another candidate like Hillary Clinton running for the Democrats against Trump, and you had a sort of left-wing populist sort of in the mold of kind of like a Bernie Sanders, who was a little more moderate on social issues, but someone who was pushing more a common man, New Deal-like policies that would appeal to people on the moderate left. That would be what I would guess would be, but we'll have to see how the landscape lays out.
Yeah, certainly there's a sense in which governments around the world, Adam, tend to have more than just two parties. And it's hard to see the United States ever really having the opportunity to have more than just the Democrat and Republican side, somebody carving out space. So it's going to be really interesting to see if somebody can have the charisma that maybe goes beyond a Ross Perot and some of the policy chops to get into this as well. It's going to be an interesting election cycle. And I'll tell you what, I certainly have enjoyed my time with you here on Faith Radio Mornings. I know this isn't the last time we'll chat, and we'll continue to talk off air. And I'll be back in this role from time to time as well. So looking forward to more with you.
Thank you. It's been an honor and a pleasure. I'm sad to see you go, and glad to know that we'll be able to do this in other forums. And thank you to everyone else for listening to us chatter over these last few months.
You're the best, Adam. Have a great week ahead, and look forward to the next time we have a chance to talk.
You too. Everyone stay warm up there.
We'll take a break here for some just end of the show wrap up, as well as previewing what comes up next on Hour 2 for Faith Radio Mornings. Hope you enjoyed that first hour of the show, certainly bringing Brandon Showalter in to talk about some of the tricky topics that very few people are researching at the level that he is researching in terms of gender identity statements, some of the gender fluidity that's taking place in our country. If you missed the first part of this hour, go back to our website at myfaithradio.com. You won't want to miss what Brandon had to say. And of course, Adam Carrington, one of our favorites as always. It's just amazing to me that he can't even yet run for president at his age, and yet he has such a sophistication and balanced view of the political scene of our day. Well, coming up in hour two, we'll be joined first by Karen Swallow Pryor, who's a professor of English at Liberty University and research fellow within the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission in the Southern Baptist Convention. And Karen recently was featured in The New Yorker with a long expose about people beginning to unhinge themselves as believers from political parties and what we see moving forward with that. So it'll be a good conversation with Karen next here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.